a victim of white supremacy. That is what I am. That is a label that I choose, that I've come to realize. Non-white is another label that I subscribe to. But to me, if someone is referring to themselves as non-white, they are ultimately saying they are victims of white supremacy. Now, not all people who are not classified as white may see themselves as victims of white supremacy. And that's okay. They're not supposed to. They're not supposed to see themselves as that if they don't choose to be. But for me, from what I have observed and from what I've seen, the label victim of white supremacy is important. The reason why is because it is something that'll remind me to let me know that there's something that I have to do, that there's something that I have to change. See, if we were on a slave plantation, right? And they said, no, man, don't. We ain't gonna call you a slave no more. We're gonna call you a business associate. You know? After a while, you sit on the plantation, you're like, oh, well, you know, I'm not a slave no more. I'm a business associate. I'm here working with everybody, collectively. But see, when you call them a slave, and they refer to themselves as slaves, it'll constantly be a reminder that they need to do something to change something. So, if we're going to be a label, then the label I choose is victim of white supremacy or non-white. Another one that I'm kind of taking on also is prisoner of war. I like that one as well. I'm a prisoner of war. I'm a victim of white supremacy, non-white person. I'm a prisoner of war. I've been captured. I was born into this. I don't know anybody who's alive right now who has any consciousness of something outside of racism or outside of white supremacy. So, in the context of white supremacy, where we live in, I'm a victim of white supremacy. So, what are my duties? If I call myself a victim of white supremacy, I'm a prisoner of war, I'm in this prison that is worldwide, I need to conduct myself in the most constructive manner that'll help me guide and work my way through this situation. One of those things is managing my expectations. I think we get kind of caught up on our expectations and having great expectations. I remember even reading that book when I was younger, that having lofty ideas and things of that nature outside the context of our reality. And so what happens is our regret comes from our inability to meet our expectations. And if you are not classified as white, if you are not a white person in the system of white supremacy, you need to learn how to manage your expectations quickly, or it's going to be a hard life. Another part of being a victim of white supremacy is the managing and the redefining of words. It's very important to learn what is being said, how it's being said, and why it's being said. Words are important. Words what define our reality. And it would seem that those who are in power use words in a very masterful way. They create the reality that we in that is confusion with words. Words become a tool. So as a victim of white supremacy, it's important for me to learn how to use words. Yeah, definitely. Another part is trusting white people. trusting white people as a victim of white supremacy must be extremely logical. I do not trust any white person that I come in contact with. Not because they are white or the color of their skin. That doesn't make sense. That's not logical. I do not trust any white person that I come in contact with because of the history that is well documented and recorded by white people themselves and how they've interacted and dealt with every single person on this planet that is not classified as white. White people created my school system. White people were the ones that created my history books. And majority of the time, especially in my history class, have been white people. They told me exactly what they have done when they first met the originals in Australia. They told me exactly what they did when they first met the indigenous people of America, North and South. They even told me and taught me exactly what they did when they first met Africans in Africa. And they also told me exactly what they did with other white people that didn't share the same religion as them in the 1930s. So, as it relates to trusting white people when you first meet them and you yourself are not classified as white, it is not logical to do so. It is actually even mentally healthy to have a certain level of skepticism when meeting any white person that you come in contact with, because the existence of racism, white supremacy. The mere fact that white supremacy is in existence and you or myself, a victim of white supremacy, we are duty bound to not trust them. Now, just because I do not trust any white person that I come in contact with does not give me the right, nor does it validate me, to mistreat them. I am courteous to every single white person I come in contact with. I show a form of courtesy, even and most especially when they do not reciprocate the same courtesy. In fact, I'm even that much more courteous and respectful when a white person is not courteous and respectful towards myself. Why? Because respect is not something that is given, it's something that is kept. They do not need to give me any respect. Respect is self-given. There's self-respect. No one can give me respect. The only respect I can have is respect that I have for myself. So because the respect that I have for myself, regardless if someone is not going to show me any courtesy, still does not warrant me to step outside of my character. And mind you, I am a prisoner of war here. I need to start acting like I'm a prisoner of war, and I need to start figuring out how to navigate through these situations and these problems that is created by the system of white supremacy. They say, do not judge a person by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. Well, let's be honest here. I cannot judge anybody's character within the first 15 seconds that I meet them. That's not enough time for me to see what the character is made of, for me to be like, okay, I can trust them. That takes time. Now, there are white people that I do trust and love. Absolutely. But that is a case-by-case situation. And the white people that I do trust and love, they know and they respect the fact that when I first met them, that I did not trust them. And that trust was earned. Respectfully. Now, there are some non-white people out here who think that you need to trust a white person who's meet them. Ask the Native Americans what happened when the white man came bearing gifts and smiling. He learned real quick what it means. another duty as being a victim of white supremacy is understanding accomplishments and possessions. See, I'm in a worldwide prison. I'm a prisoner of war. And if you're honest with yourself, I mean, really bare bones, honest, non-emotional, put away your feelings. I'll say it like this. Me, personally, there is not one thing, no thing that I have accomplished or have in my possession that was not given to me or allowed by a white person and or white people, directly or indirectly. Nothing that I have in my possession was given or not given or not allowed by any white person. If you really look at it, directly or indirectly. If you look at, say, oh, maybe my degree. I worked at my degree. Nobody gave it to me. But if you look at your degree, then you'll see there's a white, that degree, there's a white name at the bottom of that thing. You say, oh, no, I went to a black school. I went to a majority. You know, I went to HBCU. Ain't no white people at my on my degree. But that's the indirect part. Because it sure enough was white institutions, financial institutions that developed and found a way for it to pay for you to go. And you best believe, even if you may have a black face writing their name on it, there's a governing body of white people or a white person. See, the system of white supremacy is refined. So there are a lot of facets in our lives that when we look up and see, oh, well, there's no white people over there. There's none but black people. That usually, once you go past that first layer, it's definitely some white people for sure that are either in control of it, owning it, or operating it. Perfect example. On the plantation, the slave master would oftentimes get a black male or a black person, mainly a black male, to be the overseer over the black slaves on the plantation. Now, did that mean because there was a black overseer over the black slaves, did that mean that the white slave owner did not own and control the plantation anymore? No. That's not it. It didn't. It is the same situation that we're going on. Well, we will have some people who are not white in positions of authority. But do not mistake positions of authority with positions of power. See, authority can change. Power is constant. Some people think that having a black man as president was a position of power. No, that was a position of authority. You know what would be a position of power? Is if he became president and stayed president. That's power. He became president and he had his 8 year, 4 to 8 years, and he had the role. That's authority. Authority constantly change. Power is stagnant. It never changed. That's what it means to be supreme. That's the supreme part of white supremacy. So because of this misunderstanding and confusion, being a victim of white supremacy, I'm trying to, again, learn how to navigate through these confusing situations. I know I'm confused. But the one thing I also know is that my confusion is of no fault of my own. I'm confused on purpose. My confusion was created for a very specific, very concise goal. So, I'm trying to unconfuse some of these things and understand what it means to be a victim of white supremacy and the duties that come with being a victim of white supremacy. And we're gonna have to figure out how to get through all of this. I'm still learning.